Teddy Thompson is a British singer-songwriter, but his new album doesn't feature his own songs. It features country songs, some classics, some lesser-known songs, and one original. The album's called Up Front and Down Low. Thompson is the son of singer-songwriter parents, Richard and Linda Thompson, who performed as a duo before separating when Teddy was young. Teddy's played and recorded with each of his parents, and he's performed with his good friend Rufus Wainwright. A little later, Thompson will perform a song for us from his new CD. Let's start with the opening track of the CD, Change of Heart, written by Felice and Budlow Bryant.
Well, I guess you must have had a change of heart. You don't treat me like you did at the start. Your campaign of love was quite a work of art. Now I guess you must have had a change of heart. Yes,
Teddy Thompson, welcome back to Fresh Air. I really like your new album a lot. Why did you want to do an album of country songs?
Career suicide. It's been described to me. There's a couple of answers, but the short answer is that I love country music, and that's what I grew up listening to, strange as it may seem. I grew up in England, but was obsessed with country music. So it's nearest and dearest to me.
How did you get obsessed with country music growing up in England? I know rockabilly was really big in England, but I'm not sure that country music per se was.
No, and not when I was a kid, not in the 80s, neither of them were big. So, it was my parents. They listened to a lot of country music, specifically the Everly Brothers. We had a tape in the car that we wore out because we made my dad play it so many times. And I just loved it. It was the first music I heard that I remember just loving.
And what was it about the music, the melodies, and also the harmonies?
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it. It was the sweet sound of it and the harmonies and the instrumentation in that kind of country music is very sweet too. I mean, it's like saccharine sweet. You know, the sound of the pedal steel and harmonies and everything just sounds luscious.
Now, did you grow up listening to your parents' records at all?
Not really. I mean, I certainly heard them in the background here and there, but I didn't like it when I was a kid. Very uncool. Well, I say very uncool, but then there was me listening to country music, but I didn't tell anybody that either. But but my parents' music was so English and so stern and so straight ahead and so uncool is the word that keeps coming back to me. I don't feel that way now. I hated Dad, but you know, when I was 10, I just thought that was totally dorky.
Now, did everyone sing around the house, and did that help you feel unselfconscious about singing? Did singing seem natural? Because for some of us, singing is such a self-conscious and potentially embarrassing act if anybody's listening.
No, I mean, there wasn't a lot of singing around my house. It wasn't that, I didn't have that bohemian musical upbringing at all. My parents divorced when I was very young as well, so there were only a few years really where there was any music in the house, but there was a lot of great music being played and listened to, you know, which had a big effect on me. It was more like just having parents, well, mostly my mother, because that's who I was living with, having a mother with just great taste in music, and she wasn't really making records when I was growing up. So it was more like just having a great record collection and being exposed to great things rather than all singing around the piano or something.
And would she give you any feedback when you started to sing and play guitar?
Yeah, but you know, she's a mum, you know, and so most of her feedback was that everything was great. You're like, oh, you're so great. And she's still that way, which is the absolute best thing in the world. You know, that's a great thing to have, you know, to have a mother that's just encouraging and loving. So my dad was more practical with his advice. My mother was more unconditional love, you know.
And what was the practical advice he'd give you?
He'd say things like, you know, you should write some songs where you finger pick and stop thrashing at the guitar and that sort of thing, you know, which, you know, he was right. Yeah, I mean, very, you know, very pragmatic, practical things like, you know, technical things like that. You know, like, why don't you try writing a slow song where you finger pick it and see what happens? And it's good advice.
Did you learn to play guitar on your own? Were you taught in part by your father or by any of his friends when you were performing with him?
No. I took guitar lessons like everybody else. Because I was at the age when I wanted to start playing the guitar, I was living at my mum's, and you know, and my dad was, you know, mostly on tour for most of my childhood, which you know, is the way it goes in those in musical families. So he wasn't really around to teach me guitar. I'm not sure if I would have asked him to anyway. I think I thought it would, you know, I wanted to do it myself.
And what about the level of fame that you wanted for yourself? You know, like in your father's band, I mean, he has like this extraordinary and devoted following, but he's not like a huge star. Commercially. Mm. So what did you decide you wanted for yourself if you could choose, you know, when you were getting started? And how do you feel now about that?
I think when I was getting started, I probably wanted a little bit more. I craved a bit more success than I do now, but a big part of that was just the way that the record industry is laid out or was then. I made my first record about 6 years ago, and at that time, you know, I signed to a record label, a major record label, and they give you quite a lot of money, you know, and they expect a lot in return. You know, the level, the acceptable level of success is high. You know, I mean, what they expect you to sell in order to give that back to them is a bit daunting, and it's a terrible business model for developing artists. You know, you really have to sell a huge amount of records in order to succeed, and most people don't, and then you're, you know, dropped like a cold potato, hot potato, something cold, something cold and undesirable. So that made me want success, because I felt like I had to achieve success in order to be viable. But now I realize that that's not really the way it should be, and that's more a problem with the record industry. I'm certainly aware of the example of my dad as being a really good one. You know, having longevity and getting to make your own choices.
A song that you wrote that was on your previous album, Separate Ways, is written from the point of view of somebody who wants to be a big star and to shine so bright it hurts. Mm. Would you sing just like the first few lines of that and tell us where the lyric for this came from?
Yeah, I can't do the synthesizer part, but I'll mock it up on the guitar. I wanna be a huge star that hangs out in hotel bars. I wanna wake up at noon in somebody else's room. I wanna shine so bright it hurts.
So where did the inspiration for that lyric come from? Were you describing yourself or somebody else?
No, I was describing myself. I mean, you know, having said all that about fame and fortune, there's a huge part of me that, and I think most people, that would love to be rich and famous. Or maybe it's a small part of me, and a small part of everyone. That's people always, you know, people are desperate for fame, or they think they are, and I don't think musicians are any different than people that go on TV just to be there for 5 minutes. All of us crave it a little bit and think, oh, wouldn't that be great, you know, to have the money and the freedom and all that stuff. But of course, in reality, it almost certainly wouldn't be that way. I'm sure most of us, and I certainly wouldn't really like the reality of not being able to go out and do what you want and have people follow you and stuff. It must be awful. But so it's just that piece of me that wants it and yet doesn't want it at all.
Well, I'm going to ask you to do another song from your new CD of country music songs, and the CD is called Upfront and Down Low. Would you perform the song Strangers, and tell us about the song and why you chose it?
Yeah, this is one of this is a Merle Haggard song. It's called Strangers. I think it's the full title is Strangers. Well, from now on, all my friends are going to be strangers. This is one of those country songs. There's another thing I was fascinated about by country music when I was a kid was the clever turn of phrase and the almost you know, funny, but funny, sad turn of phrase. And this song has one of the best I've ever heard, which goes, "From now on, all my friends are going to be strangers. The only thing I can count on now is my fingers," which is sort of comic tragedy, but it's heartbreaking at the same time, and I love it. So, yeah, this song's called Strangers.
All the love you promised would be mine forever. I would have bet my bottom dollar on. Well, it sure turned out to be a short forever. Just once I turned my back and you were gone. From now on, all my friends are gonna be strangers. I'm all through ever trusting anyone. I was a fool believing you, and now you are
Teddy Thompson performing a song that's also on his new CD. The new CD is an album of country songs. It's called Up Front and Down Low. Now, I know you went to boarding school. I've seen in movies and read it in novels like this image of, British boarding schools where there's nothing but hazings and the boys are really cruel to each other. Was your boarding school anything like that?
Nah, I was lucky. A lot of, especially Americans, tend to, they sort of gasp. It's but Americans with kids, you know, they go, "Oh, I'd never send my child away to one of those places." Imagining just what you said, you know, the English, the austere grey buildings and the, you know, the sixth form boys whipping you. But no, I went to a famously liberal boarding school in England, which is actually the first co-ed boarding school in England. They were the first ones to have boys and girls together, whenever that was, in the 20s or something. So it's called Beedales, and it's a lot of very arty people send their kids there. So it was a great place to go. It was like camp, really.
Did it help you artistically to be at a school where a lot of children of artists were sent?
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, there were no uniforms. We all just, you know, we all sort of walked around in our, you know, trying to look cool in our sort of faux hippie duds. Everybody's trying to look poor, basically, which was seemed to be that right. thing. To you had to try and look like you'd just woken up and, you know, you had no money and like, oh, I don't even know how I'm at this posh school. But everybody, you know, there was a big emphasis on music. Everybody was in a band, and I was in a band pretty quick when I got there, and there was a big art block. And to be honest, not much emphasis on maths and all that stuff. So it probably wasn't the place to go if you wanted to get into Oxford or Cambridge, but it was great for someone like me.
And what did you play in your band?
I played the guitar. I was the singer.
No, I mean, what kind of music? Was it covers?
Oh, what did we play? Oh, yeah, really bad covers. We did, well, because there were sort of school dances, JFP they were called, which was an antiquated term for jazz, folk, and poetry. a long time ago at the school, but they didn't change the moniker. But by the time I was there, it was just everybody's rock band, you know, getting up like a school dance. And we did covers of whatever was in the charts, so to try and curry favor, try and get popular. So we did like a Guns N' Roses song, and I remember doing the Joker, Steve Miller song, because it was in a jeans advert that was very popular at the time.
Well, your new CD has a hidden track, and so it's a track that doesn't show up on the liner notes, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really register, though it shows up on my iPod as untitled.
Yes.
But it's really an Everly Brothers song. Tell us about the song and why you recorded it as a hidden track. Like, why not just like do it up front and officially include it? And I should mention that your previous album, Separate Ways, which mostly featured originals, also ended with a hidden Everly Brothers track.
As did my first record.
Oh. Definitely a pattern.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's silly now, but I did it on my first record, which my self-titled album. I did an Everly Brothers song, a duet with Emmylou Harris, and then, as you said, on my last record, in Separate Ways, I did a duet with my mother of an Everly Brothers song, and it was just a recognition or a nod to my musical. My sort of musical first love. I was just something that I wanted to do, and then I decided that I'd do it every time. That it would be, you know, it'd be a fun thing to do a duet with somebody over the songs that I love, you know, on every record, and just shove it in the back. So I did this one, this Everly Brothers song with Jenny Moldauer, who's yet another kid of musicians. She's Maria Moldauer and Jeff Moldauer's daughter, and she's a good friend of mine and a great singer. So we did this song, and it's a little known Everly Brothers song, but it's a beautiful song, I think.
Well, why don't we close with it? And I want to thank you so much, Teddy Thompson, for talking with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
After all we've been to one another, how can we become like sister and brother? Darling, I beg of you, if our love must end, ask me to forget you, but don't ask me to forget you.